You want to invest in something that is actually going to pay you back. This is the moment when we go from just fiddling around with our lives to actually taking ourselves seriously. We start to act like a champion, look like a champion, dress like a champion, carry ourselves like a champion, and win like a champion. In doing that, we raise the bar for ourselves and everyone around us. If you're a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old passing time on a night when the power is out, it's okay not to know the rules of the game. It's even a little cute, endearing. But if you're ready for something more meaningful than that, then it's time to become a winner. If you've been listening to this book and feel like it's tugging at your soul, it's time to start living with more intention. It's time to figure out what it would look like for you to win. Life is a game. In Monopoly, I'm unbeatable if I'm the car. Not so much if I'm the hat or the boot, but if I'm the car, watch out. And the key to winning Monopoly, if you ask me, is to buy St. James Place, Tennessee Avenue, and New York Avenue, the orange properties right before free parking. They're not the properties most people go for, but they're the cheapest properties to build on later in the game, so I always buy them early on. Next, I always go for the purple spaces, St. Charles Place, Virginia Avenue, and so on. If you can secure these two little corners of the Monopoly board, you will basically have the rest of the game in the bag. I would say more, but in case I ever play you a Monopoly, I'm going to stop. The point is, when you've played the game enough times and when you really know the rules, you can come up with a winning strategy. What if you turned everything you did in your life into a game? Let's say you want to get out of debt. What if you turn that into a numbers game? Or if you want to get a college scholarship, why not think of it like a board game, such as Monopoly? What are the rules to getting a college scholarship? And how can you use those rules to your advantage? What are the pieces you would need to move around to get where you're trying to go? How can you be unbeatable at this thing you're trying to do? I've had the opportunity to spend some time with Donny Osmond and always enjoyed his enthusiasm. I saw a profile of him on television where his kids were talking about his parental approach. His thinking was, if anything is unpleasant, we'll make it into a game. You can transform anything by making it a game. All that means is asking yourself, what does success look like in this endeavor? What are the steps it's going to take for me to get there? How do I begin taking some of those steps? If you're trying to get a college scholarship, you'll need to find out what the requirements are for securing the scholarship. Do you need a 3.8 GPA? Do you need a certain score on your SATs or ACTs? Do you need a certain number of community service hours? From there, you can build a pretty solid to-do list and just begin chipping away. Begin to play by the rules of the game, and you'll be shocked by how quickly doors open for you. How did I go from being a last-place skater to being an Olympic gold medalist? It's the same way I got really good at Monopoly. I figured out the rules to the game and created a step-by-step process for myself to get where I was trying to go. I didn't allow myself any excuses. I didn't let my fear of failure get in the way. I just knew what I needed to do, and I did it. Whether you want to be a spelling bee champion, win your bowling league, or be president of the United States, it can all be broken down to the rules of the game. Like Monopoly, you can do the same thing if you want to be a successful speaker, or if you want to get into medical school, or if you want to publish a best-selling book. You start by playing the game and then pay attention to the feedback you get. Are you winning the game? If not, how can you improve? If you are, what are you doing that is helping you to win, and how can you strengthen these skill sets to make yourself unbeatable? If success is a journey, your character is revealed in the process. Deep down, we are all strong, but are you living up to your true identity? Develop a champion's character. I mentioned my friend Mike Ruzioni earlier in the book. Mike started playing hockey at a young age. He dreamed, like most young kids, of what life would be like after high school, and he pictured himself going to the University of New Hampshire playing his three favorite sports, baseball, football, and hockey. But as most plans do, his fell through, and Mike ended up making plans to head to the smaller and lesser-known Merrimack College, a Division II school. Then in July, the summer before he started at Merrimack, he got a call from a friend asking him to play for a summer league. Typically, he didn't play hockey in the summer, but he agreed, thinking it may be a good way to stay in shape. And miracle of all miracles, a guy who happened to be refereeing one of the games Mike played that summer was Jack Parker, the assistant coach at Boston University. Mike showed up and played like he usually did. He wasn't trying to impress anyone. He didn't even know there was anyone to impress. He just brought the same intensity to the ice that he always brought, the same work ethic he carried with him wherever he went, the work ethic of a champion. And when the summer league ended, Jack asked Mike if he would be interested in a scholarship to Boston University. One yes to a summer league, one commitment to play your heart out even though it was only a pickup game, one choice to bring your winning self to the table even when you're not sure it will matter, can change everything. You never know when that opportunity will come. You may not even recognize it when it gets there. For now, you just have to be willing to make the choice. You get to decide if you want to be the kind of person who finishes first. Mike played the rest of his career at Boston University. As always, he put in the work. He became the second all-time leading scorer for the university and was drafted by the Hartford Whalers. And yet, when it came time to sign a pro contract, he was sent to Toledo to play as an amateur. This didn't discourage Mike. Instead, he kept playing his heart out. At the end of his first season, he was voted Outstanding American-Born Player of the Year. He was certain he would sign with the New York Rangers and turn pro. But right as his time was coming, the general manager of the team, John Ferguson, was fired, and the new manager wasn't interested in signing any of Ferguson's guys. As quickly as it had come, the opportunity he thought was his was yanked from underneath him. You may have been in a position like this, where it seemed as though everything was coming together and then it fell apart. The decision you make in this moment, to act like a champion or to complain and play the victim, determines everything. As for Mike, he chose to act like the champion he is to go back to Toledo as an amateur. It was in Toledo that Mike made the decision to try out for the famous 1980 Olympic hockey team. If everything had gone exactly as he had planned, Mike Rizzioni never would have been on the U.S. Olympic hockey team that year. He never would have won his gold medal. He never would have been a part of the Miracle on Ice, as it was called. Even more important, if Mike had not made the decision early on to live as a winner, act like a winner, and play as a winner, he never would have found himself standing on the gold medal platform. Winning is a choice. You get to decide. We do not get to choose all the opportunities that come our way. We do not get to choose our entire path. But we do get to choose what we do with setbacks and opportunities that come our way. We do get to choose how we behave as we wait to know what is coming next. We do get to decide that no matter what happens, we will be ready. Are you willing to have a good attitude when things aren't going your way? That is the attitude of a winner. Establish your trustworthiness. I have this weird hobby of collecting life-threatening illnesses. Due to that, I've had to live life differently if I wanted to live at all. This means that I've developed habits of eating healthfully, working out, and thinking positively because if I didn't, it would cost me more than it costs most people. These things are simple. Avoiding sugar, getting my workouts in every day, drinking enough water, reading my Bible. None of the habits are too dramatic, but they have an amazing effect when you do them all together. I tell the skaters I work with, if you want to be competitive, you're not allowed to miss in the short program. What I mean is that of the seven elements you're required to hit in the short program, you're not allowed to miss any of them. Not one, ever. This consistency is the equivalent in my mind of drinking your water and doing your exercises and reading your Bible. You simply can't miss, not even one. You have to build a reputation with the judges that you take even the small things seriously. That you won't miss. When you build that kind of relationship with the judges, over time they come to expect and appreciate that you are the kind of skater who delivers no matter what. You win in the small things, which helps you to win in the big ones. It's no different in the business world. Business deals are not made in a single interaction. They're made over the course of time, It's conversation after conversation, business meeting after business meeting, email exchange after email exchange. This is all part of building trust with a client. If they know you are trustworthy with email, they can assume you're going to deliver for them on deadlines. If you're trustworthy with the small things, you'll be trustworthy with the big ones. Trust isn't built in one interaction or two or three. It's built in the day-to-day moments of life. Victories build on each other. Have you stopped to ask yourself what would make today a win for you? You don't need to hit all of your goals today. You may only need to accomplish one small goal, and that can be the victory you stand on tomorrow to accomplish your next small goal. Small victories empower us for bigger victories. Those who win in the big things are faithful in the small things. If you believe finishing first is about being big and flashy when it's really about showing up and doing the work, you'll miss it. Behave with humility. Too many champions get stuck in the trap of winning for the wrong reasons. I never wanted that to be me. I never wanted to be the kind of guy other people were rooting against. I never wanted to be the opponent other people wanted to bring down. I always wanted to be the guy who was so nice, he was impossible to hate. I'm the type of person who wants to be liked, and I wasn't going to let competition change that about me. For some, winning is about sticking out their chest and rubbing their competitor's nose in their greatness. For me, winning was always about something bigger. That mission has been so important to me. So every time there was a crack in the door, I took it. I did my part as best I could. But I never allowed myself to get too attached to the outcome. I wanted to win, but I wasn't willing to step on people in the process. The other thing I did was to make the choice that I was going to be the kind of person who wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty. Even after my Olympic success, my attitude was, okay, you need me to unload trucks? I'll unload trucks. You need me to do a media interview at 5 a.m., even though my plane landed at 2 a.m.? I'll do it. If I didn't succeed, it was never going to be because I didn't do my part. Take risks. One of the reasons I've been so successful with my yearly charity event, An Evening with Scott Hamilton and Friends, is because I'm not afraid to take chances. Every year I do something drastically different, something nobody is expecting, something people can't help but talk about. They might not even necessarily like what I do, but they can't help but talk about it. What does the audience like? What surprises and delights them? How can I get them on their feet next time? It's easy for me to do this because usually the event is not about me. When your goal is bigger than you and you realize, in fact, so little of what you do is about you, that no one is paying much attention to you anyway, suddenly you can get out of your own way. If you're struggling with getting out of your own way, ask yourself who needs this that is not you. Do it for that person. After recovering from my first brain tumor, which took away all pituitary function and left me taking medications for total hormone replacement, I knew I had a lot of work to do if I was ever going to be in good physical shape again. I had stopped skating shortly before the tumor presented itself and had gained weight from both the radiation and the drugs I was required to take. So I was 25 pounds heavier than I was used to being. After the 9th anniversary of my annual cancer benefit in Cleveland, I decided I would come back to skating for the 10th anniversary show. I knew it was going to be hard. I was older than I had ever been, surprising, right? And had all these physical obstacles I needed to overcome. But I also knew I wouldn't be satisfied with myself if I didn't go for it. So I made the decision to get back on the ice. Shortly after I decided this, I ran into my friend Tom Peterson of the band Cheap Trick, whom I've known for more than 25 years. I told Tom I was ready to get back on the ice and that I wanted him to be on stage during my first show back. As soon as I said it out loud, I knew there was no going back. It is powerful to tell someone what you're going to do because now you're accountable. I reached out and contacted my trainer, Francis Fessler, to tell him what I was trying to do. I told him I needed his help to get in shape. He set up a training regimen designed to help me build strength and flexibility and avoid injury, as well as drop weight, then get me on the ice. It was a slow and steady plan, just showing up day after day for now. After a few months of working out, I asked my choreographer, Sarah Kawahara, to help with a routine for my first night back on the ice. She agreed and came to meet me, but when she watched me skate, I was not expecting her response. She said, "This is it? This is as far as you've come? This isn't acceptable, Scott." Sarah told me that if I wanted to skate again, I had to do better. She choreographed a routine, but it was one she knew would stretch me further than I had been able to go up to that point. This was a wake-up call for me. Honestly, it was the realization that showing up every day and doing things little by little was good, but wasn't enough to be a champion. If I wanted to be a champion, I was going to have to work harder than that. I was going to have to outwork everybody. At that point, the workouts from Francis took on another trait, torturous. I kept showing up every day in mind, body, and spirit, but now I had to bring something else with me, iron will, a willingness to suffer temporary pain for a long-term gain. These are the moments when you wonder if it is all worth it. But I would remind myself, what else was I going to do besides continue to suffer? To suffer the pain of being average, to suffer the knowledge that there was more I could do and I was hiding my potential. It took time, but I started to do okay. The hard work I was putting in at the gym was showing up on the ice. I was doing some double jumps, getting my legs back under me. I was starting to get in the air and starting to spin a little. After all my hard work, I had achieved the skill level of a really average juvenile skater. Be memorable. A few weeks before the big event, I found myself in a New York cab with my friend Bobby Goldwater, a former executive at Madison Square Garden as well as the Staples Center in Los Angeles. We had been friends for years, and I told him what I was doing. He listened and nodded knowingly. Then when I finished, he asked, "So are you going to do the backflip?" I turned to look at him in that cab as we inched through the crowded streets of New York. A skeptical smile came over my face. "Are you crazy?" I said. "I'm 51 years old. The last thing I need to be doing is backflips on the ice." He nodded, but also shrugged. "Don't you think there's going to be some expectation? I mean, when was the last time you did a show without a backflip?" Suddenly, as we sat there in that cab, I realized what I needed to do, regardless of whether it seemed crazy. People were going to be expecting me to do a backflip. This was the expectation I had set. And yes, it was unexpected for a 51-year-old figure skater to do a backflip, but that was all the more reason I was going to do one. I called Francis right away and told him I needed to do a backflip. He wasn't surprised and found a guy named Tim Richards, owner of Let It Shine Gymnastics, which was really close to the rink, and Tim said he could help me. So he set me up with a program. We started practicing on a soft trampoline, then a little bit harder of a trampoline, then a little bit harder, then a tumbling run, and then a gymnastics floor. He didn't spare me any pain. He wanted me doing as many as 60 backflips in a day, and I came as close to that as I possibly could, even when I was getting sick. I was determined, and I knew that if I wanted to do something extraordinary, I had to act in extraordinary ways. When I finally decided to take the backflip to the ice, I started with two spotters on either side of me, with a rope tied around my waist so they could catch me if anything happened. Then I removed one of the spotters, then the other spotter, and before I knew it, I was doing backflips on the ice again. At that point, I knew I had it. I was feeling crazy, but also like, I've got this thing. This is the power of hard work. You suddenly realize you can do things you never thought you could do. You have power you never knew you had. There are endless stories of people who have been told, you can't, you won't, you shouldn't, and who have overcome all the odds to do it anyway. Will you be one of those people? When you know who you are and what you're capable of achieving, why would you not finish first? Unrealized potential is some of the greatest pain in the world. If you are suffering or hurting, there is a way out. Work hard. We are wired for hard work. Some of our greatest pain in life is because we are avoiding work. Build your life in the way of a champion. Be memorable. Be unique. Be different. Be special. Be the absolute best version of you. We get only one shot at this thing called life. If you're not satisfied, there's a reason. It's time to stop sitting around wasting time, waiting for what you want your life to be like. It's time to start going after the amazing things you know are possible for you. It's time to begin realizing the unique potential that has always been waiting for you. Put everything on the line. When I arrived in Cleveland to do my backflip on the ice in front of an audience for the first time, I was ready. Or so I thought. 8,000 people waited in the audience, not sure what to expect from me, wondering what my comeback would look like. I made it through my first program without a problem, which was shorter and simpler than the longer program. Then it came time to do my big solo near the end of the show that would feature my backflip. I got out on the ice and went for it, giving it everything I had. Cheap Trick was singing the song Miracle, and I went for my first jump, and the weirdest thing happened. I just sat down, fell all the way to the ground. Even stranger than the fall was when I started to get up, I realized my legs were just gone, totally wasted from all those workouts. All the hard work I had put in to do this backflip, and now I wasn't sure I could even manage it. To land this thing, I'd have to get up, power skate all the way down to the other end of the ice, and come back to where I was now to execute the flip. I lifted myself off the ice and thought to myself, I'm doomed. But I took a half circle around the ice to get some speed up, and I skated across the center of the ice to the other end of the rink. I looked square into the face of William Shatner. I burst out laughing, and that moment broke the tension for me. I thought, now there's something you don't see every day. The fact that William Shatner was sitting there watching me skate made me feel like he was there to support me in this quest. We have been great friends for a very long time. So I skated as hard as I possibly could to the other end of the rink, and I gave every last ounce of energy I had, and I threw the backflip. At that point, there were about 40 seconds left in my routine, but as I landed the backflip, the entire arena stood to its feet and stayed standing for the remainder of my routine. The audience got me through that performance. That was when I realized that none of this had ever been about skating. It was about pushing past my limitations. It was about demonstrating for myself and that entire audience what was possible. It was about inspiring others to explore the limits of what was possible for them. This is why 8,000 people stood in an arena. Not because I did a backflip, but because I showed them what was possible when we are willing to push beyond our own self-imposed limitations. That was one of the most powerful moments I had on the ice in my entire skating career. And it happened for me at 51. Age is never an excuse. Physical limitations are never an excuse. It's never too late. It's never too early either. Are you willing to swallow your pride and do whatever it takes to get your audience on its feet? Are you willing to get over your own ego and try something truly different, something revolutionary, something even a little drastic to get out of your own comfort zone and make an impact? If what you've tried hasn't worked, try something else. Be the person who raises the bar. Do it for yourself or do it for someone else. But more importantly, do it because it makes the world a better place. Not long after I landed that flip, the brain tumor came back for a second time, and I realized there was a second reason to be in good shape beyond the fact that I could do a backflip on ice skates. My strong physical condition was going to help me survive. There are a million reasons to finish first, and zero reasons to talk yourself out of it, at least no good ones. Are you ready to get started? Listen for the applause. I skated with the Ice Capades for a while, and its president, Dick Palmer, was someone whom I respected immensely. He was a guy who knew how to play by the rules of the game. Do you know how he evaluated his skaters? He would stand on the mezzanine and listen to the applause. If a skater could get a great reaction from the crowd, that skater was invaluable to him. If a skater couldn't, he needed to get someone in there who could make that happen. Those were the rules of the game. What would it look like for you to stand in the mezzanine of your life and listen to the kind of applause you're getting? Where are you getting the audience to its feet, and where do you have room to improve? Whether you're playing Monopoly or tennis or trying to start a business, winning and losing provide incredible feedback. Whether you're ice skating, trying to secure a top job, or launching a new product, you have to pay attention to how others are responding to what you're doing. Feedback is a reliable indicator of your progress. Everything I've given you up to this point is the foundation for what you're about to do, which is to start building your dream life. You get to decide where you're trying to go, what success means to you. Nobody gets to decide that for you. And once you've decided, you have no reason not to really go for it, to play like a grown-up, to become the champion you have always been. Chapter 11. Never Look Back. Winning is fun, sure, but winning is not the point. Wanting to win is the point. Not giving up is the point. Never letting up is the point. Never being satisfied with what you've done is the point. Pat Summitt. For a long time, finishing first felt like it was all about being a competitive skater. I didn't have any clue at the time that I would do work with cancer, that I would open the Scott Hamilton Skating Academy, or I would tour for so long with Stars on Ice. I was focused on one victory at a time. Inevitably, my competitive skating career came to an end, and I started my professional skating career. When I toured with Stars on Ice, my life didn't become any less competitive, but the competition started to shift. I was focused on how we could grow as performers and as a team, how we could continually create a culture of excellence, and how we could set the bar higher and higher for the audience each year. I wanted to keep surprising our audience with everything we did. Every time I performed, I'd look down in the audience and inevitably I would see a guy sitting next to his wife checking his watch, looking miserable. I realized what was happening, probably, was that his wife had requested to go to the ice show for date night. He complied, praying that none of his friends would see him there. I knew in my heart it was my job to entertain that guy, to win him over. If I could get him on his feet, if I could earn his respect, he would not mind coming back again, and I could keep skating for as long as it was fun for me. What I realized is that I was skating for people who didn't want to be there as much as I was skating for those who did, and that the greatest compliment I could ever be given would be to get everyone on their feet, especially the guy who didn't want to be there. Even today, I'll be in an airport somewhere, and a man will walk up to me and ask if I'm that skater. I respond yes. And of course, then he tells me he doesn't watch skating. He's more of a football or basketball guy, but that his wife absolutely loves me. Then he goes to get his wife and brings her back and says, "Look who I found." And she has absolutely no idea who I am. When this happens, every single time I say to myself, I win. This is the power of continually pushing to be better. I used to say to the other skaters, if everybody is going to do a butt wiggle and a triple toe loop, we're not going to stay in business very long. In other words, we needed to be constantly setting the bar higher. We can't rest on our past successes. We can't be satisfied with what we did back then. We always, always have to be pushing forward to what is in front of us. And in doing that, we make ourselves an appreciating asset instead of a depreciating one, living off our past successes. Success can be its own obstacle if we're not careful. Too many of us hold on to our past wins at the expense of future wins. If you're dwelling in the past, even the really good stuff about your past, there is no way you'll ever make any progress in your life. It's like eating half an apple and thinking you'll save the rest for later. The more that time goes by, the less appealing that apple looks. Stale success is like a browned apple. What served us today won't necessarily serve us tomorrow. What was nourishing yesterday becomes poisonous if we're always stashing it away, saving it for later. This is why I hid my Olympic gold medal in my underwear drawer for so long. I didn't want any reason to get stuck in the past. As amazing as that moment of victory was, I didn't want to stay there. I always wanted to be changing and growing. You will move in the direction in which you're pointed. If you're always looking back to the past, reliving your failures or even your successes, no wonder you're not moving forward very quickly. You can either spend time sitting around thinking about the glory days, or you can get about the business of finishing first in your life right now. The idea is to stay pointed forward, to focus your attention on the direction you'd like to go. Focus forward. One key way I've been able to stay focused forward is by setting my eyes on people who are better, faster, stronger, and more confident than I am. It's hard to get too confident in yourself when you've surrounded yourself with people who are all better than you in one form or another. One of my very favorite skaters to watch when I was young was Gordon McKellen, Gordy, as we call him. He was the 3-time national champion and the best show skater I had ever seen in my life. When Gordy walked into a room, two things would happen. First, someone would put Neil Diamond on because this was his favorite music. And second, women would all fix their hair and everyone would move their chairs closer so they could talk with him. I mean, who doesn't want to have that kind of pull? It was magnetic. Watching Gordy gave me permission. That was the biggest thing I got from him. He was fearless, and watching him take chances gave me permission to take my own chances in skating, to try new things and be exactly the kind of skater I wanted to be. I wasn't exactly like him, but I didn't need to be. I could take the elements of his fight and drive that inspired me so much and use them as fuel to become my own best version of myself. That's what Gordy did for me. He gave me permission to be the skater I had always wanted to be. Another skater who always kept me facing forward was a Russian pair skater named Irina Rodnina. The thing I admired most about Irina was that she always won. I mean, always. It wasn't that when she stepped on the ice, people thought she could win. It was that they assumed she would win. When she was competing, we would all think to ourselves, okay, who's skating for second? Part of the reason I liked her so much was because she was everything that I wasn't. She was confident. She was strong. She skated fast. She had all the qualities I didn't have, but that I wished I had. We need people like this in our line of sight. People who represent the qualities we want to have but haven't been able to achieve yet. They remind us that the unthinkable is possible. We point ourselves in their direction, and we move in the direction we're pointed. Irina won 10 world titles and 3 Olympic gold medals with 2 different partners. Not only that, but as a pair skater, she also always made her partners better. She called them to the highest standard, sometimes even higher than they themselves thought they could reach. When she and her partner would go out on the ice, it was almost like she was daring her partner to skate even faster. She was a fierce competitor, a force to be reckoned with. If you don't have people you admire like that, who you consider heroes, who remind you of what's possible, and who point you toward your greatest potential, it's time to get some. A big part of my success in skating came because my heroes weren't skaters. I admired anyone who could build a platform over time. Look around you. Look for the people who are having the kind of impact you want to have. You won't have to look far. Stop living as if you have a shelf life. The attitude of finishing first has to be, who I am today is not who I want to be. It's the foundation of who I am becoming. This applies not only to my skills in my industry, but also to my character and integrity. When I turned pro and started touring with Stars on Ice, the one thing guiding my vision was that I knew I needed to build an audience. I had watched so many other athletes be successful for a relatively short period of time and then not do much after, and I knew I didn't want to do that. I don't know about you, but I don't want to have a shelf life. I don't want to expire. I always want to be leveraging the success I have toward a greater impact. My vision has always been so much bigger than skating. I always want to have my eyes on the horizon of where I'm going, what I'm going to do next. But the thing I realized about building an audience is that you can't do it simply by being a great athlete. You have to be a remarkable person. If you're great at skating or basketball or playing the piano, you'll get a few people to follow you. But it isn't until you prove who you are as a person that the world begins to take notice. Once you become the best in your field, what are you going to do next? Think about Neil Diamond for a minute. Whether you're a diehard fan of his music or not, you know who he is. That's because Diamond doesn't just perform his music. He touches your heart. He isn't just a good guitar player. He builds a relationship with people. He wins them over. He shares his joy of his music, and everyone who listens is always happier they did. If we can do that, it doesn't really matter if we're doing it through music or skating or ventriloquism. Making people smile is really what it's all about. That's what I set out to do with Stars on Ice. I wanted to make people smile. When you make the decision to do this, you become different and special. This attitude is so unique that it gets people's attention. It is easy for someone to show up and act like, "Look, I've worked really hard and I've already accomplished a lot. More than most of you, it's time for you to worship me." But that's not the kind of person I want to be, and I know it's not the kind of person you want to be either. I just watched Neil Diamond perform his 50th year anniversary world tour. Can you believe that? 50th anniversary. How many of us can say we've been doing something for 50 years? And not just doing it, but doing it in a way that is so full of contagious joy, it's drawing audiences from all over the world. This is what Diamond is doing, and no wonder he's a legend. I want to be the kind of person who spreads joy and hope the way that he does. What kind of person do you want to be? Do you want to be the kind of person who rests in what you did back then, or the kind of person who is always pushing yourself toward your next greatest achievement? Do you want to be the kind of person who has one moment of glory in your life, or the kind of person who consistently delivers results and spreads contagious joy wherever you go? You can hold on to your past successes, but if you do, you'll never discover the hidden potential living inside you. Face forward, focus forward, and ask yourself how you can use every experience you've had as a building block to become the person you have purposed yourself to become. Be willing to do something badly. When it comes to karaoke, if there was one guy who could skip it, that would be me. The audience might appreciate it if I did. But think of all the fun I would miss if I didn't let myself be bad at something every now and then. Some things are worth doing even if we do them badly. Many years ago, I found myself at Gary Shandling's house after playing golf with my friend Kevin Nealon. Kevin and I had met a few years before at the White House. President Bush had invited athletes and entertainers to a sports day on the South Lawn, and while I was there, we became friends. My kids call him Big Kevin because he is 6'5". We were the two shyest people at the event, so we gravitated toward each other. At Gary's house that day, it was like Celebrity Central, which can make you feel like you don't want to do anything to draw attention to yourself. So when Gary suggested we all play a game of basketball, I hesitated. I looked around the court and realized I was the shortest person there, but then I thought, you know, I might be the worst player here, but it will be fun. So I played, and I'm so glad I did. It's a memory I'll carry with me for the rest of my life. You don't have to be the best at everything. You can decide to do something just because it's fun or because someone you love likes to do it or because you want to. Take a deep breath and launch. Give something a try. Don't take yourself so seriously. You never know what might happen. On my 50th birthday, as a gift, David Fischoff, the owner of the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, gifted me a spot at one of his camps. It had always been a dream of mine to play the drums, and I figured this was my chance. So I started taking lessons a little bit, and I told my friend Sterling Ball what I was doing. The next thing I knew, a drum set showed up on my front porch. So I spent a little time playing alone in my house, practicing here and there, making some progress. By the time I showed up at the fantasy camp, I felt like I was ready. But, of course, the minute I looked around, I realized I was surrounded by legends. I saw Danny Serafin, the original drummer for Chicago, and Alan White, the drummer for Yes. My heroes. I'm not joking when I say I was basically paralyzed with fear. On the very first note I hit on my drums, both of my sticks flew out of my hands. I almost died. Instead, I told myself, well, now that the worst has happened, it's all uphill from here. time to have some fun. There's something freeing about not being the best at something. There's something really great about saying, I'm going to give this a shot no matter how it goes. Rami Jaffe, the keyboard player from the Wallflowers, was the camp counselor assigned to bring us together as a band. He helped us choose an Aerosmith song that we would perform at the end of the camp at the Whiskey A Go-Go. We went to work practicing, five total strangers and my friend Bob Fishman, the CBS Sports Television director. Even though we didn't know what we were doing, we were willing to learn how to play that classic song together to give it justice. To top it all off, the band also had to perform for a private showing. Sooner than later, the legends began to walk in. Songwriter and producer Bill Hudson, rock drummer Sandy Gennaro, then the one and only lead singer of Aerosmith, Steven Tyler. I just sat there, a beginner drummer trying to fit in. But they all watched and listened, nodding their heads to the beat. All the while I kept thinking, is this actually happening? Am I playing this song I've heard a thousand times for Steven Tyler himself? We all threw ourselves into the experience. We decided to go for it. What other choice did we have? And when everything was said and done, we did it. Because we were willing to put our egos aside, we got to be a part of something much bigger than ourselves. We left that experience thinking, wow, I can't believe I just did that. What an incredible memory. I might have been the worst player in the whole camp, but who cares? I got to share the experience with people I respect, and I did the best I could, and I'll never forget that feeling. Go where you have no business being. Try what you don't have the skills to try. Put yourself in a position where you're certain you'll be the worst one there. Then, just have the best time with it. You can have a mountain of excuses, or you can have fun. Beware of hometown syndrome. When I came back from the Olympic Games with my gold medal in 1984, then-Governor of Colorado Richard Lamb sat me down. He said, Scott, I want to warn you about something I call hometown syndrome. It's something that happens to many athletes when they return home from the big games and are worshipped for their achievements. It's easy to let all the attention go to your head. It's fun now. Enjoy your moment, but this will fade. No matter how accomplished or important you think you are, nothing can shield you from the reality of being human. You are not invincible. You are not more important than anyone around you. It was March 17, 1997, 10 years into my touring with Stars and Ice, the day I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And it was then that I realized all at once that I was getting this diagnosis almost exactly 20 years after losing my mom to cancer. It was devastating, but that day I did the same thing I did every day. I put on my skates and got on the ice and performed the show. The next morning I woke up and started my adventure of getting my health back. Everything I had learned about being a champion, about fight and drive, and what it meant to be a winner on the ice, I could use to fight the most important battle I had ever fought. The battle for my life. When I started skating, I had no idea I would get cancer. I had no idea I would get involved with cancer research. And yet, looking back, I can see how all the moments of my life tied together to have a deeper purpose and meaning. My mom's death when I was very young propelled me into skating, motivated me to do the work it took to be a champion. Then my own battle with cancer gave me empathy and a greater understanding of everyone else who has to walk this road. My successful skating career gave me access to people, resources, and opportunity I could use to help. And now with the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation, I get to play a key role in research, education, and survivorship for hundreds, even thousands of people who have suffered like my mom and I have. The great thing about finishing first is that it opened doors to new opportunities. It teaches you things you wouldn't have known otherwise. It gives people confidence in your ability to meet objectives and be successful. And ultimately, it makes you the kind of person we all want to become. What if I had stopped at the gold medal? What if I had decided that was my greatest achievement and it was time to throw in the towel? Can you imagine what I would have missed? The opportunity to participate in one of the most rewarding, fulfilling, and important victories in my life. I'm not trying to point the finger at myself and say that I have it all figured out. I'm nobody special. I've made as many mistakes as the next person, probably more. All I'm saying is that we can't get caught up in our mistakes, our failures, our setbacks, or our victories. None of it defines us. None of this is worth holding on to. We have to build on every victory toward our next victory, or we'll miss the incredible potential we each have to bring our gifts to the world. Don't settle for celebrity status. I'm grateful that I get to meet people all the time who have every reason to boast in their success, but don't. Several years ago, I was at a party and saw the frontman for the band The Knack from across the room. You probably know them from their hit song, My Sharona. I couldn't believe it. He was someone I admired, and I knew he'd had some trouble with his health, so I went over to introduce myself. We ended up having a great conversation about life and health. Never once did he act like he was too important to talk to me. Ringo Starr was at the same party. I walked over to him and said, "You're Ringo," and I have to admit I was a bit starstruck. Meanwhile, he just sort of shrugged as if to say, "Yes, I am." True stars don't get wrapped up in their accomplishments. They know what they have achieved is just something they did. What's far more important is who they are. You can tell the difference between celebrities and stars because true stars don't walk into a room flaunting their status. They are facing forward, not resting in the past. They're wondering what comes next and what bigger impact they can make. You can grasp the future, but you can't touch the past. So you cannot let your past define your future. The past is over. I'm not that kid who came in last at Novice Men anymore. I'm also not just an Olympic gold medalist. We are constantly evolving. Now on to new goals. Cancer research and serving the skating community. Dad to four. Husband to Tracy. What's past is past. I'm pointing myself toward the future. Too many people in our world today settle for being celebrities. Famous for not doing anything at all. And their characters reflect it. There is a temporary popularity and then there is longevity. You can chase either one. At the end of the day, one is built of empty promises and the other one is built on something solid. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be known simply for being known. If I'm going to be known, I want to be known because I've done something that matters. Something that makes a difference, even if it's in just one person's life. Something small but meaningful. I'd like to be remembered because I worked hard, mastered a skill, shared what I had with the world, and didn't hold back. Get what you want. You can have anything you want. You just can't have everything you want. So you have to decide what is truly important to you and go for it. No holding back. If you want to be the best guitar player in the world, you're going to miss out on some nights drinking with your friends. If you want to be a world-class juggling champion, you're probably not going to go on as many dates as the next guy. You do not have to worry about sacrificing too much. Balance is not something we have to seek. Balance achieves itself. You may get started after a goal and realize you don't care about it as much as you thought you did. Maybe you thought you wanted to be a weightlifting champion, but now you realize you really want to be a father. Maybe you thought you wanted to become chief executive officer of your company, but now you realize you actually want to volunteer at your church. Whatever you do, be the best at it. This is what finishing first is all about. Not making value judgments on what goals matter more than others. It's about discovering the limits of your human potential. Can you be the very best at whatever you decide to do? There is a healthy balance of ambition and relationships, but most of us have not tipped the scales yet. The beautiful thing about balance is that anytime anything gets out of balance, it tends to reset itself. Our job is in learning to pay attention to these cues. For me, The cancer diagnosis was the first time I realized the balance was off. Cancer brought things back into balance for me. I could have noticed sooner, but when the diagnosis came, I realized I couldn't ignore what was happening anymore. It was my wake-up call to slow down, take care of myself, and set a new course for my life. That journey was painful. At the same time, it was through this process that I discovered a new ambition, to have a healthy family. I realized I was actually more comfortable in front of 17,000 people than I was in front of one person, and I wanted that to change. And wouldn't you know, it wasn't too long after this that I met my wife. You may worry that success is going to close doors. The truth is, it will. But it will open more doors than it closes. You earn a level of respect, a reputation. It sets you up on a firm foundation for everything else you want to do. Your problem is not that you have too much ambition, but that you haven't tested the limits of your ambition yet. When you do, you'll find what you're capable of achieving. Reinvent your success. I knew a guy many years ago who was not the most gifted skater. To do the jumps that came easily to everyone else, he had to break them down into smaller movements, picking the jump apart until he could teach himself all the little steps. Then he could string those steps together to perfect his jump. He eventually became a competent skater, but never a great skater. Do you know what he became instead? A great coach. In fact, he became a brilliant coach, one of the best I've ever known. And part of what made him such a brilliant coach was that he knew how to break jumps into tiny little steps, to the point where he could pick apart a skater's jump and pinpoint exactly where the problem was. Then he could have the skater practice the problem area over and over again until the jump was flawless. What he thought was success for him turned out not to be success, and still, he is a champion, a world-class figure skating coach. For every decade of your life, success looks different. That's okay. It's more than okay, actually. It's normal. We always have an opportunity to reinvent ourselves. If you don't like who you are, ask yourself, okay, who's next? Not what's next, but who is next? In other words, who do I want to be in this next season? The most important work I will do in my life has nothing to do with skating and everything to do with spreading a message of hope to anyone who will listen. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a hometown hero. I'm doing the work to build my future and have a pretty good idea of where I'm trying to go. If you are ready to be done resting in what you've accomplished in the past, you can start today by dreaming about what is coming in the future. You can take the first step towards what is next. If you're holding on to past successes because you're afraid you'll never succeed again, ask yourself this. What is it costing you? What is it costing our world? What is it costing humanity? The dreams and goals in your heart now are the inspiring stories of your future. But only if you let go of who you were and start taking steps to who you are becoming. Let go of the past. I tell people they'll know the day they've truly survived cancer because they'll get upset while sitting in traffic. They'll be sweating the small stuff again. It's a privilege to be able to sweat the small stuff in our life, yet it's a privilege we can lay down any time we choose without having to face a life-threatening illness. Any time we want, we can decide to live life with an open hand instead of a clenched fist. We all have things worth holding on to from our past, and we all have things we'd like to forget. I've made every mistake you can make. This is why I stay so focused on my faith in Jesus. Because of who he is, because of what he did, everything we are, everything we've done, it's all in the past. The future is made clean. His mercies are new every morning. Shortly after my first brain tumor, I was baptized. As I was lowered into the water, I realized all the things that had happened in my past had led me to this moment. They had all led me here, and yet I was getting to let go. It was a powerful moment I'll never forget. My wife Tracy was putting our son Aiden into his car seat after everything had happened, and she looked up at me. "How do you feel?" she asked. The only thing I could think to say was, "Lighter." "All that stuff got me here, but I'm not going to carry it around anymore, any of it, the success or the failure." This honestly is my favorite thing about faith. We have no right to hang on to anything anymore except Jesus. It's been taken and paid for. It's time to move on. You can call us crazy, those of us who believe this, but pay attention. We're happier and lighter. Chapter 12. Winning changes everything. Maybe the game of your life simply means the one that most inspires other people. Tim Howard. What it looks like to finish first has changed everything for me over the years. Since I quit skating, I've fought and beat more than one brain tumor. My wife and I adopted 2 kids from Haiti, and now we have 4 children. I'm focused on being a dad now, and a good husband to Tracy, and my health, since the brain tumor returned last year. I'm focused on cancer research, hoping we can change the way cancer is diagnosed and treated. It's illogical what I've accomplished in my lifetime, illogical that I even tried. I look back on it now and see how many things could have just collapsed. It was all God. He allowed me to fail where He wanted me to fail so I could learn. And at the same time, every single success was because of Him. When people ask me about finishing first, that's the first thing I tell them, that if there was an it factor here, it can't be explained. It's like catching lightning in a bottle. It's not very probable. It's like I told the doctors at my most recent checkup for the brain tumor that has returned now 3 times. They kept looking at my scans, trying to figure out how it was possible that, in the latest scan, the tumor was smaller than it had been in the previous scan. That wasn't supposed to happen. It was so improbable. When I was told that the tumor shrank, I asked the doctor how that was possible. He just smiled and said, "God." Amazingly, miraculously, I am living a life that I never could have imagined. It doesn't make sense. And at the same time, I know it all makes perfect sense. Heavenly sense. God has always promised to do more than we could ever ask or imagine. It's just so few of us take Him up on His offer. I'm not done. I'm never done. In fact, I'm doing my most important winning work now. But everything I love about my life came from winning. Being a winner doesn't stop just because I'm not in ice skates anymore. God will wink. People talk all the time about big breaks when it comes to success. I don't think too much about big breaks. But I think the world of what my friend Squire Rushnell would call God winks. God winks are right place, right time situations. They are about trusting in a power greater than yourself that can help you win in a way you couldn't by yourself. This kind of winning has nothing to do with you, is bigger than you, and points you back to the purpose you're serving that is greater than yourself. Squire has had personal experience with this since writing a book years ago about God winks. He did what most authors do when they publish a book, which is to hit the ground running trying to sell copies, marketing, publicity, the whole deal. Then one day Oprah was giving a televised tour of her house, and on her bedside table was a copy of Squire's book. Talk about a God wink. The next day sales for his book went through the roof. He had put in the work to write a great book, but that last little push he needed to find success came in a way he could not have arranged, even if he had tried. Squire had sent a copy of the book to me early on in the process, but I didn't get it because it accidentally went to an old address of mine in Los Angeles. Then one day, I was sitting in Nashville having lunch at a restaurant, and in walked Squire with his wife. He just happened to be in Nashville for a day or two. He just happened to come into that restaurant. He just happened to come at the exact time I was there. So now he was able to send a copy of his book to my new address. Everything about our meeting that day was exactly what his book is about. That is a God wink. The more we pay attention to God winks, the more we begin to find them everywhere we go. Whether you believe in God or not, if you begin to look for God winks, you'll find them. Your confidence will increase. You think you don't have enough confidence in yourself to become a champion? Try winning a